Good afternoon, everybody, from All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. I'm playing the music of Ennio Morricone in the background, and I have Danger Mouse, Brian Burton, and Daniel Lupe in California at our NPR West. And there may be a disconnect of why those two things are happening at the same time. Good afternoon, everybody.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
There's a new project that's coming out that's really pretty fascinating, and the project is called Rome. It's a very moody and wonderful record. I've really had a lot of fun listening to it recently. I want you both to just sort of tell us a story about this, because I think it's a really cool project. I think people would love to hear about how it came about. This particular project has fascinating facets and stories and people. I'd like to play a little of the music. I'm going to tell people that there's a chat room open. We're going to ask you all to, as you hear the music and the story starts to unfold, ask your questions. We're going to keep all the questions for Daniel and for Brian related to just this project called Rome. And Robin Hilton's here. He's going to ask some of the questions that come in over the chat room that's open now. And Robin, why don't you first, let's just start by playing a little bit, if you would, of the opening cut to Rome.
And, sure. This is a theme of Rome.
And as we hear this music, just start thinking about the sorts of evocative sounds here, the wonderful production. And in just a moment, I'm going to ask Brian and I'm going to ask Daniel to tell us the story of the record called Rome. So I'm going to ask you both to just a little bit about what inspired this record. You both grew up in very different places. Daniel, right? You grew up in Italy, yeah?
Yes, correct.
And Brian, where'd you grow up?
Grew up in New York and Atlanta, both.
And yet there is must be the connection of watching Italian Westerns, spaghetti Westerns, as kids. I don't know if you're both the same age, but that'd be my guess where it started. Would that be right?
I think for me, it wasn't until college and, you know, going to film classes and things like that. Daniel, I think you grew up on it though, right?
Yeah, I've been exposed to, you know, those soundtracks for many years, starting very young. That's everything that the ride stayed on. TV station were playing Fellini movies and spaghetti westerns, really.
And what's the attraction for you both?
Well, I mean, I remember seeing the films and the first thing jumping out being the music itself, and I never really heard it isolated or listened to any of the soundtracks on their own, but you know, seeing the trilogy, seeing the Sergio Leone films, that was the first thing. So the Ennio Morricone stuff just jumped out at me, and there was this whole other world of music I just never heard before. So for me, it was just the films themselves. It was more the music than anything.
Well, for me, what was really interesting was the combination of kind of a pop music, talking about 60s pop music, and also avant-garde technique, compositional technique that Ennio Morricone was using, that made this incredible soundtrack to a movie that was meant to be actually very commercial. So that was very appealing, very interesting for me.
And some of that avant-garde stuff really sort of came out of the fact that they didn't have much of a budget when they started, right? I mean, I would imagine Ennio Morricone would have loved to have had an orchestra when he did his, you know, first movies, but didn't. And so they cracked whips and, you know, all sorts of sound effects, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, Morricone, before he started to do all these movie scores, he has been already a very, very successful arranger for pop records for about 10 years. I would say that it's true in a way that I know the story that they reused some existing material for The Fistful of Dollars, the first movie, but I wouldn't say that they didn't have the budget to maybe do a full orchestra recording, but in a way they were maybe trying to save some money as well.
So you guys meet 2004. So had the subject even come up to want to work together, and then how did it come to this?
Well, we met through a common friend. I had been talking about Daniel's album, An Italian Story, which I really loved, and I guess somehow it got out. I guess it was press or something, and we had a common friend that said, hey, you know, I know Brian, and we happen to both be living in Los Angeles. And so we just kind of met up because I admired his music, and maybe he was curious about me, I don't know.
And the music, and Daniel, you were doing was film scores, is that?
Yeah, I was doing film scores, and I was definitely very impressed with Brian's work,
yeah.
The Grey album, but as well as his knowledge of this music. It was really outstanding. His outstanding collection made me think, wow, this guy really, he's a fine connoisseur of this genre now.
And so that kind of led us into just really having a basis of something to talk about, and then pretty quickly got into maybe trying to work together in some way. And then I was finishing up the first Gnarls Barkley album, and I really was in need of some arrangements to bring it alive more, and Daniel, I thought, would be great. So he took a shot at some of that, and has some, there's some great arrangements on the Gnarls Barkley album from Daniel. Mm-hmm. And from there, we've worked together many times. He did the strings on the Broken Bells album, the Dark Night of the Soul album.
Oh.
What else?
Nice
Daniel?
Work.
Joker's Daughter. There's a bunch of stuff,
yeah,
we've done.
A lot of stuff.
But we worked really well together. But a lot of that actually came after we actually started working on Rome together.
I'm just trying to imagine the conversation around the beginning of Rome, and if you could sort of paint that picture, what were you thinking of, what did you want to do?
Well, we wanted to work together, but the idea, I think, was to write some songs, maybe even, like Daniel was saying, pop songs in some kind of way, and to have these guys who played this music that we love so much play it, maybe in their style, in their way, and in that exact environment and all that. And once we started going down that road, we were like, well, we should do it exactly that way. You know, it was not only them, but then the instruments, and not only the instruments, but the studio, and not only the studio, but the tape. And it just got to be more and more specific. So the more specific I think we wanted it, the longer it took for us to kind of get it off the ground. And then I remember one day, I guess Daniel came in, I was finishing the Gnarls Barkley record, and he kind of cornered me and was like, we got to do this, you know. and it was like, we got to do this, if we don't do it soon, you know, it's going to take forever. And I was like, you're right. So I said, let's just do it, let's plan it, let's pick a date. And we just planned the date a few months ahead of time, and we just started doing it. You know, you have to jump into something this big and just go. You can't really, there's never really a right time to do it, you just have to do it.
A lot of people are joining us in the chat room, a lot of people joining us online. They may have missed a little bit of the flavor of music. We played a little bit of it. Why don't you pick something for us? We'll play a little bit, and then we can talk about the studio you were in, the people you got together. It's really quite a story.
I guess you can play the clip from Season's Trees, which has Norah Jones singing a bit on it.
Great. So this is a record called Rome. It's coming out in the future, we'll just say for now. It's months away. We're talking with Danger Mouse. We're talking with Daniel Lupi, the two collaborators that put this record together. So let's hear a little bit of the music. And Norah Jones, we'll get to why Norah Jones in a minute as well. Thanks. Beautiful. And before we get to how you pick the singers, let's get even a little more down to you said so we wanted the studio, we wanted the tape machines, we wanted the musicians. Talk about that studio. Tell us, people who've never seen pictures or heard descriptions, yeah, what this thing is like.
Daniel knows so much more of the history on the studio. I'll let him take this.
Yeah, well, first of all, I just want to point out that this whole being faithful to that sound and asking the participation of these players, it felt very natural. I mean, it made a lot of sense. It's not that we made too much effort in basically planning that, because once we started with a certain feeling, a certain vibe, it just made sense to go with the tape and the old microphones and the studio and the musicians. Now, the studio is pretty simple. The fact that it's been there for like 40 and more years, and it was a studio founded by Morricone, Trovajoli, Piccioni and Bakalov, the four basically biggest and busiest composer of the 60s and 70s in Italy. It was called Ortofonic, and then it didn't really work out. So they sold it to a gentleman, and the studio became Forum. That's the new name, mm-hmm. which is still the name today. And it's very fascinating because it sits underneath a church. It's really below the ground level. And it just is full of this memorabilia, old tape machines and things like that, old mixing boards. There is even a room that is basically the like an archive of all the original tapes, the 2-inch tapes, where you can read all the names of incredibly successful soundtracks. Sure. And here it is, the original tape where it was tracked, the music. So this whole atmosphere made it even more enjoyable, I would say, our stay and our work there.
And then you want to pull musicians from, you said it's sort of just a natural extension. What was that like? Did either of you make some of these phone calls, and you can name out some of these musicians for us and some of the things we might know them for, the guitar players or whatever? First of all, did either of you make these phone calls to these musicians?
Yeah, Daniel sure. was the one who speaks Italian. And,
yeah.
So Daniel
actually knows and actually knew some of
English.
These people.
So yeah, I want to know, Daniel, when you said to them, listen, I'm working on this project with Danger Mouse. What's Danger Mouse in Italian? So,
well,
so anyway, but
did you even
how
tell
did that
them?
Go?
I don't think he did.
They wouldn't have known
anyway.
So the musicians are in their, well, first of all, when we started, they were in the early 70s and some in the early 80s. Mm. So now they are obviously mid-70s, mid-80s. No, they did not have a clue of really what we were trying to do. I mean, these are musicians that are retired. They were not playing together for many, many years. I would say that, yeah, they were not really understanding what we were doing. Although I, you know, even me and Brian, we were really the first time we were trying this thing as well. But they definitely did not understand who Brian was. And I have to say, it was pretty charming to maybe walk in a restaurant. This is 2006, so mm-hmm. basically you had the album Send Elsewhere with the song Crazy really being played all over the place. And we might even maybe have the song playing in the restaurant or whatever. And nobody was even making the connection. I mean, they're really, you know, they live in their own world. So it was a pretty fascinating thing to bring them into this.
Did they ask you where the movie was?
No, also another thing we should really point out, like JJ Munari, the drummer. I mean, he played percussion and the anvil that you hear in the like all the, you know, the Fistful of Dollars soundtrack. Mm. And then you have people like Alessandro Alessandroni, the choir master for the Cantori Moderni. He's actually the whistler and the electric guitar player on all the soundtracks. So.
And did he play any electric guitar on this record?
No, I think, no, he didn't. We had another gentleman, Luciano Ciccaglioni, who is as well a very experienced session player. But Alessandroni was basically the choir master of this group called Cantori Moderni. And it was actually to me much more interesting to try and to put together the choir, because that was really not something that people have ever done.
Can we illustrate again a little bit more about what people will hear when they hear the album Rome? Let's play a little bit. Brian, you want to take us to something and tell us how it came
this
to
one,
be?
This one is an instrumental track, Roman Blue. It was this great piece of music that I that Daniel had started and come up with, and I added a lot of the top melody arrangement thing. So this is a good example of us kind of working together on something. But it was I heard the original music from Daniel and thought it was amazing.
Doing that voice.
That's Edda.
That would be, yeah, Edda Lorso.
Okay, and Brian, why don't you tell us who Edda is, because everyone's heard this person's voice before.
Yeah, she's the main soprano voice on all of the, I guess, the trilogy stuff.
You say trilogy stuff, I just want to make sure people.
Oh, the
Fistful of Dollars.
Yeah, Fistful of Dollars and Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And
yeah, for a few dollars more.
Yeah, and so she was one of the eight singers that Alessandroni was the choir master for, and we also had her do some solo stuff as well, and there were a couple of moments that just really, really stuck out that we decided to use on the album, and that was one of maybe two or three, Daniel, maybe? We just wound up using about two, I think.
Yeah, Theme of Rome has that too, as Edda. Yeah.
And she's no young one. Her voice was beautiful, though, still. Yeah?
Definitely.
Yeah. I was saying that she's a classically trained singer, and she definitely still master her art, I would say.
Robin Hilton's with me. He's looking at questions from the chat room.
Yeah, keeping in mind that, most people haven't heard the vast majority of this record. They're getting just a taste for it now. A lot of people are hearing things that are reminding them of different songs and films. One person, when they heard, we opened up with Theme of Rome, and they said that they heard the Battle of Algiers in that theme song. Was that a reference point at all for either of you? Not at all.
No, I don't think so.
Well,
I don't think so. It's very visual music. I can see how you can probably think of a lot of things with some of the instrumental music.
There is a snare drum, kind of military marching pattern that maybe reminds the theme of Battle of Algiers, maybe.
Well, a little more broadly, one person said that when they first started watching spaghetti westerns, Italian films, that they thought that the music was the most universal music that they heard. I'm not entirely sure that I see that as immediately as they do, but what do you guys think?
Well, it definitely combines a lot of different things. There's funk, there's jazz in it, there's classical music, there's pop music in it. I think it's kind of... a good observation. I mean, what do you think, Daniel?
Yeah, no, I actually agree a lot, because all these sounds like anvil, like kind of ethnic flutes, they're all instruments, as well as some of the noises that the choir does. They're very raw, they're very, I would say, bottom level type of sounds that I think they are recognizable in any culture. So there is not any sophistication, so to speak, or at least apparent sophistication. So the sounds are very earthy, very natural, I would say. And that's something that can get recognized by, I guess, anybody.
So it's a lot of, I think, humor in this music and in those films, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that really crept into what we were doing. I don't think I don't think there's really much humor in it. Maybe in the actual recording process, there was probably some humor, but not necessarily in any of the music that made it onto the album.
How come?
Yeah, well, I don't think we were that interested. It's definitely true that there is a very distinct humor in the way the movies were shot, and the way the music plays with those shots and by itself too. But I think me and Brian were more fascinated by more of a dark layers of those soundtracks. I mean, as a matter of fact, you know, the main titles of those movies are kind of bright and positive and epic. But if you listen carefully, there are many scenes where the music becomes, I think to our ears, became much more interesting. But in general, I think we were more driven by kind of the more of the darker aspect of that vibe.
And we were trying to do songs. We weren't really trying to replicate a soundtrack or anything like that, even though there are definitely elements of that in the music. We were trying to do things that were pretty much songs and not really sound effects or things that would have been cues for movies or anything like that. And I think that the songs that we kind of came up with and that we wrote were just more in that vein of more melancholy, I guess, and
true.
That kind of thing.
And when you think about songs, then you start to have to think about singers. So we heard a little bit of Nora Jones, and that worked real well. Tell us how Nora came into the picture.
We had talked about, you know, who we were going to try to get, and me and Daniel went back and forth for, I don't know, maybe almost a year after we first went over to
Who was your first choice, Daniel? Did you have a little short list, or did you go?
No, there were many people that could have been very interesting, but definitely, you know, there were not, like, specific ideas until we...
Yeah, that's what took so long.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, that's what took so long. It was, we would, you know, think about it, and we're not going to name anybody, but we thought about, well, maybe this person, that person. And I think that what wound up happening was Jack White got involved, and as the male singer, he had heard some of the music from me while I was on tour, because I kind of stopped being on tour to go do this in Rome and then went back on tour again, and I had some of it with me and played it for him to try to impress him, I think. And about 8 or 9 months later, I might have worked. Yeah. I never thought, well, I'll have him be the singer or ask him. I never thought that. I just thought, you know, one musician to another. I was like, this is this thing I'm doing with Daniel Lupi, and, you know, he's an Italian composer. What do you, you know, isn't this cool? And that was pretty much it. And then about 9 months later, we were just on email, and it was... I said, hey, remember that thing, you know, I played for you? Do you think you have any interest in maybe singing on it? And he did. And so he went through and listened to the album and heard some songs that we had done that gave him some vocal ideas. And so I had been kind of doing the same thing, because I wanted to write the female part myself, because I kind of had an idea of some of that. And so once Jack got involved, that made it a little bit easier, I think, to see, okay, who would be a good complement to that. And also it helped as far as once the female parts were actually written for the vocals, and then it was a lot more clear who would work. And I've always loved Nora's voice. I know Daniel, when I brought it up to Daniel, he was very positive about it as well.
Yeah.
And Jack was too. So we just went to Nora. We hadn't really gone to anybody else. And Nora, I felt for these songs, was really, really great. I thought she would be anyway before we did it, because I thought she would be able to kind of play a character in a way, kind of, she'd be able to kind of maybe be the any woman or any girl, because that's pretty much who that person is on this album. It's kind of how it feels to me. And the minute she started singing, Daniel was there, you know, it worked immediately. Her voice fit right into this music, and it, you know, the thing about this music is if the wrong person is singing on it, it'll stand out very, very quickly. If there's one wrong element added to it, it's very clear and very easy to see, and that didn't happen with either one of them.
Can we play a bit of the Jack White?
Yeah, this is Two Against One.
Excellent. I'm here with Danger Mouse Brian Burton. Well, he's in New York. I'm in Washington, and Daniel Lupi is in L.A. at the L.A. Bureau of NPR, and we're talking about a new project. It's called Rome, and it comes out in the future. Is that the best way to put it?
I think so, yeah. It's early next year.
Okay, great.
Make no mistake, I don't do anything for free. I keep my enemies closer than my mirror ever gets to me. And if you think that there is shelter in this attitude, where do you feel the warmth of my gratitude?
And the words, where'd they come from?
Jack's words came from Jack.
Okay. really good.
Yeah, Jack's words came from Jack. I wrote the Nora parts myself. The vocals were done that way. Jack took on his own, and I guess I'd written Nora stuff before I knew it was going to be Nora. So, but that helped, I think, to figure out who it was going to be.
Where do we go from here? Tell us anything else that you think that I can't even imagine at this point. Stories you must have, things falling apart.
Well Daniel, I think you could tell. I mean, when we first went over there, I remember the first day we got there, I was just checking out the studio and Daniel was on the phone making phone calls trying to find, I don't know, were you trying to find the musicians or were you trying to find instruments to use?
No, the musicians were on board already.
The musicians were there, but the instruments, I think we were trying to track down. You can't go to Rome and start renting really cool vintage instruments. That's just not the way it works. And I found that out when we got off the plane. I think Daniel already knew that.
Right. No. That's why. Yeah, I tried to fix that, but you know, there's so much you can do over the phone. And we really went through, you know, friend of a friend, etc. One being Fabio Pignatelli, is the bass player for the band Goblin, who. The band recorded many soundtracks for the Dario Argento movies. But anyway, that was one person, and then other people that I knew there. And we kind of went around Rome with this van and trying to pick up these instruments from various locations. I mean, we went to a Vespa mechanic who happens to...
A car.
Also... Well, no, he happens to actually collect all Italian instruments from the 60s. But we went to his garage. And
the Beat Garage, yeah.
Yeah, the Beat Garage. And he has imagine the guy has wearing a work suit and he's fixing a Vespa, and then we walk in and said, well, I called you half hour ago, so where are the vintage guitars that you mentioned? and so he take us upstairs and show us all this equipment, and you know, and also the only way to there was no price, okay, meaning that there was not a fee, an hour fee or a day fee for those things. So We paid them with bottles of wine, and we thought that was the best thing to do, and they were very happy. The instruments part was really tricky, but we pulled it off. Yeah,
yeah,
it was fun.
It took an entire, you know, the first day we were there. We had Morricone's engineer. His original engineer. He doesn't work anymore, right, Daniel?
Yeah, Sergio Marcotulli. He's definitely not working anymore. Sergio came and gave us these great, you know, ideas about, or at least where he did place the drums and the amplifiers back in the days. Although that's also another interesting story, because our engineer, Fabio Patrignani, he's a man who is in mid-40s now, and he's the son of the person who bought the studio from Morricone.
Wow.
So, in other words, that he learned the craft by assisting his father in recording all the Morricone soundtracks. I think his first assistant job was to work on Once Upon a Time in America.
Oh, what a great score that
Yes,
is.
So he was telling me stories of, you know, Sergio Leone sitting there and, you know, at that point they were still projecting the pictures with actually a film projector and playing to and recording to picture.
In real time.
In real time, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And Fabio learned also his craft as well from Sergio Marcotulli, the older engineer. So to see them again together was really fascinating, very charming. So that was also a good... A very good experience on a human level to see how these people they remain friends, they respect each other a lot, and they were still ready to go and work together and play together again.
Well, what was the reunion like? Was it
Do you want to tell? I mean, there was they came in and they were kind of hugging and there was even like some tears, and
some
then
tears.
about an hour or two into it, they're screaming at each other. It was amazing. It was like they were that.
Yeah,
I don't understand a word of it. I'm just sitting back watching them, thinking, is this all gonna go? Are they gonna leave? Is this gonna fall apart? But apparently, that meant that they really were pretty close, I guess, that they could do that.
I remember I overheard one of the choir singer, he mentioned like oh my God, there is the same smell, you know, of the furniture of the it's a big room, it's a very big room, you can put like 200 players in it.
Wow.
You can put a symphonic orchestra in it, so they were remembering these details, you know, and you know, the doors, and I remember them really being very excited about it, and yes, very polite for the first 2 hours, and then the you know, yeah, the leadership of Alessandroni took over, and he started to reprimand, maybe I can say that, you know, the singers, like if they were in their early 20s, you know, that was pretty funny.
That's great. Robin Hilton, you have a question from the chat room. Well, again, you know, people don't know the music, so we're not getting a lot of questions, but a lot of people listening. So.
Very curious about it, though. One person writes, Brian, this one is for you. He says that he saw you at Bonnaroo around 2004 and that you spun an epic spaghetti western instrumental with breakbeats over the top. So two questions. One is this a sound that you've sort of woven into your own work for years? And this listener wonders if you're going to have any of those similar breakbeats in Rome, in the Rome album.
There are no breakbeats or samples or anything like that on the Rome album. That was kind of the whole point. I didn't play one instrument on the album. I think, Daniel, you played a tubular bell on a track. But the whole point was that we were not going to be playing. It was something that we were going to write and produce, and Daniel conducted the orchestra, and so that was the whole point, you know. It does have modern qualities to it, but it does also have a timeless kind of older feel to it as well, and it's definitely always affected and been a part of work I've done. I don't remember what it was I would have been playing
in 2004.
I don't know, but it's very possible. It's always really been a big part of it, and I've definitely have sampled some things in the past that came from this genre of music. But I mean, when I was working in my bedroom, I didn't think I could, you know, just make some calls, get some money together, and go to Rome and just start recording that music. It just was a little easier to sample it at the time.
Some listeners curious about the whole creative process, and one writes, is there a particular order in which either of you develop a track musically? For example, do you tend to structure it from the rhythm up, or do you generally create from the melody down?
How do you do it, Daniel?
I usually start with a melody and a bass line, actually. To me, that's kind of that creates the structure for the song. And then the harmony, which definitely gives the feeling of a song. But I just wanted to say that it was a very interesting process for me, because I never co-wrote music with anybody before doing this with Brian, and it was very interesting to meet and show each other the ideas and start to actually mix ideas, which I think is the most interesting part of for me at least. to see how he would come up with the melody on top of a chord progression that I would write, or vice versa. Or maybe I would write a string arrangement for one of his idea, etc., etc. And the good part is that it felt always very natural, and nothing was, you know, forced. It just went very smooth, I would say. So
we have very similar ideas and feel when it comes to chords and melodies as well, which was really, it's really hard to pick out who did what on the album. I would say it'd be really, I don't think anybody could really guess.
By now,
even sometimes I even sometimes forget. Sometimes it's kind
me
of,
too.
Did I do that melody? Or did you do that melody? Is that right. Your chords or mine? It's really hard to tell sometimes.
Right.
I usually started out with chords myself. I would just sit down and do chords on a piano or guitar, and then fill in some rhythmic things. And so some of the early demos that we both had and gave to each other would have pianos, guitars, drums, bass, all of them that we kind of, I would put them together myself, and then Daniels would have all the elements that he put together. So he'd give me a track that had all those things in it, and I'd give him a track that had all those in it. But sometimes there'd be a melody on top, sometimes there wouldn't, and that's where we would kind of come in and help each other or combine the tracks, or where I like this part of your track but not the rest, or he'd like, well, I like this one part but not this much. And then we just went back and forth for a while with that before we went over there for the first trip. And then after we went and did the first trip of all the backing tracks, we came back and worked a lot on the top line melodies and things like that that were going to be either sung by the choirs or the choruses when we went back. So in 2006 we did the backing tracks. In 2007 we did all the vocals, the backing vocals, meaning, you know, the choirs and things like that, and the soprano voice that Etta did. And then in 2008 we went back. This is, I think it was October every year. And then we did all the strings, the orchestration and things like that were all done that last year. And at that point we had already had the vocals from Jack and Nora were already in place when we did the strings. I think that was really important. You kind of had to have the vocals done before you could really add the strings to it.
When I think about this project and just sit back and listen, I think that in some ways you guys are holding up a big calling card to Hollywood or someone, saying, hey guys, we'll do a soundtrack for you. Are you guys interested in doing a movie soundtrack?
We've talked about it. We have. I know Daniel already can get that gig on his own. He doesn't need me to do that. I think I personally have been asked to do soundtracks in the past, but each time I talk to people, they're usually were a little bit more into, well, we were thinking you could mix a little hip-hop with a little rock and roll. And it's like, oh, boy. And I knew I had Rome going this whole time with Daniel. And I was like, well, people will hear a whole other thing. And then maybe there'll be the right film or the right person, the right situation. And not everybody who approached me was exactly that way, but just mostly all of them. And, you know, Daniel is actually an influence on me, too, as well, just as a musician. So I definitely get a lot from that as well, from the time I met him and started working with him. It, you know, I hadn't really done any of my own arrangements before I met him, and he kind of showed me how to do that. So I learned how to do that from working with him. Just string arrangements and things like that. He gave me a lot of confidence when I would say, hey, what do you think of this? Hey, what do you think of that? And, you know, I'm thinking, well, if he thinks it's good, I know he would tell me, because that's kind of the relationship that we have. So it definitely, since then, it's really gotten me more serious about maybe the possibility. But again, I don't think, I think Daniel's has done some great stuff as it is. And so I think there might be some stuff in the future that we do together in this way. But I think, you know, like I said, I don't think he really needs me as far as doing film soundtracks.
And Daniel, what do you gain from doing this project, from working with Brian?
Well, I mean, it's really true that I started to expose myself to what was going on in the music world, let's say in the records, once I listened to Brian's work. I mean, of course, I've been very privileged about it, because I get to hear maybe what is not the average you know, music that gets played on the radio. But through Brian, I've definitely been exposed to many, many interesting sounds and songs, and really that's how I kind of got my updating that's how I've been updating my ears. I think what has been interesting is really seeing how Brian is. He really can think as an arranger, as a string arranger, as a choir arranger, as you know, people that did for many years. He's very capable to do that, and that was definitely a plus in doing the record that way.
That's great. Why don't you one of you pick something to go out on? We'll play a little bit of. The record's called Rome. It comes out early next year. Danger Mouse, Daniel Lupe, thanks for doing this today. What song we want to play?
What do you think about Rose, The Broken Neck, Daniel?
That would be perfect. Okay.
Great. Excellent. Okay. Thank you both. This is fun.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm Bob Boylan, Fair and PR Music, along with Robin Hilton. It's All Songs Considered. Track song.